48, and Wednesday calling for rain and a high near 50 degrees. It's currently 39 degrees. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here. We're getting an update on COVID-19, both as it impacts Douglas County and other places as well. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us again. Dr. Bob, thanks for being on.
Well, thank you for having me.
As we talked about the news segment, the county numbers have been going down 4 weeks in a row. Talk about that.
Yes, it's a very, very good trend. We're seeing a decreased number of cases, a decreased hospitalizations, and that certainly looks well for the future. However, we're worried about the holidays because the holidays can obviously cause a real spike in cases.
And it'll be a few days, really, probably about a week before you know if we're going to have an uptick due to Christmas, correct?
Right. It's usually one or two incubation periods, so we're usually thinking about 10, 12 days. The problem with this holiday is there are two holidays combined, and so we may not be able to see the big increase until mid-January. Well, I will tell you, Douglas County did a great job staying home at Thanksgiving, and we really did not see a spike after Thanksgiving.
So talk about the number of cases in the past week. I think 74 was the number.
Yes, that's a great number. And actually, those numbers going to even go down from there. So really has been a good number of cases, decreasing number of cases. However, we still have a bunch of people in the hospital, and that's worrisome. None terribly ill, and we've not seen any big outbreaks recently.
And just getting the new numbers in my email a few minutes ago, talk about today's data.
Well, today's data shows just a few cases today. We're still working on a few. You know, what happens over these long holidays is that people may have done some cases and not reported them, but it does look like our number of cases is less than 10 for today, so another better day.
Yeah, the new report from DPHN saying 3 for today, and that's a pretty small number. Now, one of the things I did want to ask you about, and I see it looks like it'll be addressed by either the state or the county today, is that during the holidays, as you mentioned, there are less counties reporting. I know on either Christmas or on Saturday, there were several counties statewide that reported that didn't report at all. They just were simply missing. And I'm guessing that's just because of some of the public health agencies working at a lower staffing level.
Right. There are many of these public health agencies that only have a couple of people in the entire county. And that's not surprising that they might have gotten one day off during that time. We're lucky here in that we've got about 30 on staff. And so we were fully staffed through Christmas and we'll be fully staffed for New Year's.
Now, as we have the potential of going down to a lower risk level, that's going to have a big impact on the business community.
That will have a great impact on the business community. It will allow some of the businesses that are now closed to open up again. It'll allow schools to reopen, gyms to start to reopen. Boy, we've really been looking forward to this.
Now, recently, you talked about this a couple weeks ago. One person going to work when sick led to an outbreak of 7 deaths and to an outbreak where 300 had to quarantine. This actually got picked up nationally by CNN and others over the past few days. Talk again about the impact this has had and people still trying to plow on through when they're not feeling well.
Right. So we as a society seem to mythologize people who never miss a day of work or never miss a day of school. You know, at schools, we give out perfect attendance awards, but that means that those kids might have gone to school when they were a little bit sick. And certainly in our society, people who never miss a day of work are somehow raised up as models. Well, during this time, going to work when you're a little sick, going to church when you're a little sick, those can really lead to more cases. I cannot tell you the number of cases we've had where people said, look, I thought it was allergies, or I thought it was a little bit of a cold, or I thought it was my yearly bronchitis, and they went to work and then exposed others. So this is a different year. During this time, if you're the least bit sick, stay home, because it can lead to tragic downstream consequences.
And obviously, 7 deaths linked to one situation, and 300 people that had to quarantine, a lot of those right up to almost Christmas.
Right. So what happens is when you get these cases, they then have daughter cases. And so what happens in the daughter cases cause more people to be quarantined along the way. And so we're not looking to shed blame or cast blame on anyone. What we're saying, though, is that decision to go to work when you're a little bit sick can have a lot of downstream consequences. We had a case a few weeks ago where a school employee went to work while they were potentially contagious and exposed lots of others. So again, we don't want to, we want society to be back to normal. And one of the best ways to do that is avoid gatherings and avoid going to work or church while you're sick.
Now, the governor made an announcement last week on school districts making their own decisions on reopening, with the metrics now being voluntary. Are you going to be getting involved in giving some advice to some of these districts as we go along here?
That's what I've done most of my morning, is to talk to school districts about getting back to school. And we know that school is important for many kids. Not only is it a place of great education, but it's a place where they get meals. It's a place where they get socialization. It's a place where they get out of the house so that the parents can go to work. And so schools do have many, many great advantages, and that's why we would like to prioritize school reopening. However, we do recognize when there are a lot of cases around, there are going to be a lot of cases at school. So we do want to be careful about school reopening. But I think if any time is a prime time to do it, it would be now, if we don't see a spike from the holidays.
So far, one district's made an announcement they're going back to in-person when they resume on the 4th. Others, it sounds like, are probably waiting for a few days. And if you've been in messages or phone conferences this morning, it sounds like some others are going to be making decisions during this week about what they do starting next week.
I think so. So I think in January we'll see. And I think one of the other things that'll be important is getting vaccinations for teachers. We think teachers are going to be the top of the 1B group. And we would hope we could get to the 1B group sometime in January or early February.
Now, with some of the school districts shifting, will that mean that sports gets on the calendar sooner as more kids are back to in-person learning?
I do not know where sports come in on this. I know the hope is that we can get back to sports. Sports makes a whole new level of complications. As we've seen with pro sports and with college sports, there are a lot of cases among athletes because they do tend to be close. And so I do not know what's going to happen with high school sports.
And state trends on COVID-19 cases, has the state been dropping as well as the county?
Well, the state has clearly been dropping. It has not nearly dropped as fast as our county. We're one of the lowest counties. In fact, I checked this morning, and except for Honolulu County in Hawaii, I think we are the lowest county over 100,000 population in the entire country. So Hawaii has some great advantages in dealing with this since they're an island, but I think we're the lowest county over 100,000 in the country. We are one of the lowest counties in Oregon.
Where are we seeing this surge around the state?
Well, again, the surge in Oregon has mostly been in the Tri-County region. So looking at, say, for example, average daily cases per 100,000, we're less than 10 at this point. Marin County is in the 30s, Clackamas in the 20s. And so basically what you see is a high case rate and a huge population in those areas. The good news is that overall Oregon is quieting down. Really now only Jefferson County, which is a small county, is the only one that has a significant number of new cases per day.
What about national numbers? Where are some of the hot spots at the moment?
Well, the hotspots now are clearly California. So when we look at Los Angeles County, 137 cases per 100,000 or 13,000 cases every day. San Bernardino County, 165 cases per 100,000. Monterey, 106. So Southern California, really quite hot. And then Arizona is also quite hot. Yuma County, Maricopa County, Pima County, and Cochise County are really hot. And then back east, Tennessee has had lots of disease. Pennsylvania's had a lot of disease. And then New York, which had generally been pretty low, is now starting to see an uptick in the number of cases.
Looking around the world, what about areas with particular problems?
Well, the U.S. still hot, but also the United Kingdom. So the United Kingdom is seeing this new mutation, this B.1.1.7 mutation, which seems to be more contagious, and they're really struggling. Sweden is also struggling with new cases. Israel, Switzerland, Czechoslovakia, all struggling with new cases.
And what about the response to dealing with it? Because you've got these countries that are very different in how they do healthcare and even some of the healthcare that is available.
Right. So we're going to see that the great inequities in healthcare throughout the world are really going to play a part. So while we're going to get vaccinations in the U.S., who knows how long it's going to be to get vaccinations in places like Africa and India. Now, those are enormously populous countries that will require a tremendous amount of vaccine. And much of the vaccine we have now requires a fairly rigorous cold chain. That will not work in places like Africa and India. So we're going to have to figure out how we're going to vaccinate the rest of the world.
Got to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson on the way. At One County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us this afternoon, looking at the COVID-19 situation. I'm curious, from maybe the more science side of this, how public health professionals continue to learn more about the virus. Talk about some of the new things out, and I suppose really the place to lead off with this is this mutant strain, if I'm saying that right, that seems to be now popping up in multiple counties, or rather countries.
Yes, multiple countries, not yet in Oregon, so we'll see what happens there. So what happens with viruses, every single virus, as it spreads, it has a chance for mutations. Some viruses mutate very quickly, like the flu virus or the HIV virus, and some mutate slower. This one is kind of in the middle on the slow side. Because it has a little proofreading mechanism in it, so it tends to have fewer mutations. But it does have some. We saw one big mutation early on called the V614G, and that made the spike protein a little bit more vigorous, and by doing that, it increased the infectivity. We now have two different mutants, one in the UK, which is this B.1.1.7, that seems to make it more infectious, not necessarily more serious, but more infectious by as much as 50 or 70% more infectious. This is a group of new genes in there that changes the spike protein. So we're a little worried about that. We might be worried because it could change how well the vaccine works. We don't think it will, but that's going to be something we're going to watch very carefully. The other one is the 501.V.2 mutation in South Africa. What that one does is that seems to make it more contagious and make it more serious in young people. The point is that mutations will occur, and what we want to do is really decrease the amount of disease out there, because every virus that's out there can mutate into something more serious, and we really want to keep the cases down. I'm especially worried about the mink farms. So mink are these little parrot-like animals that do catch the disease, do spread the disease, and they live in close quarters, which allows the chance for lots of mutations to occur. And there is a worry that mink farms led to one or both of these mutations that we're now seeing in Europe and South Africa.
When you have these mutations, do they have to be treated differently, or is it still treated the same way as you would with what we would call a more typical COVID-19 case?
Yeah, we think so far, except for the increase in infectiousness, it's going to be about the same. But, you know, the worry is that they will be more or less sensitive to remdesivir, that they'll be more or less sensitive to the vaccine, and that's what we really worry about. So the best way to decrease the number of mutations is to decrease the amount of virus that's out there. The best way to decrease the amount of virus that's out there is to reduce our case count.
And some countries adding travel restrictions in the last few days. Some initially weren't going to do that, but have quickly switched gear because of the concern about this mutant strain or strains spreading more places.
Yeah, that is a concern. And if you have a disease that's, say, 50% more contagious, that's going to make it really hard because it means that it will spread faster. It also means that you have to have far more people vaccinated, even if the vaccine works, to keep the disease down, and could change how well the vaccine works. Again, we have no data that these new mutants are going to be resistant to the vaccine, but it does change their genetic material enough that we do worry a bit.
Now, how's the vaccine rollout going in Douglas County?
So far, it's going well. There's vaccine at Mercy, and they've given out quite a bit of vaccine. And the Federal Pharmacy Partnership is giving the vaccine to nursing homes. I understand that one of our nursing homes got vaccinated yesterday very successfully.
And how long will it be before we have gotten through all the healthcare workers and the older people that are vulnerable to get to the next level of essential workers?
So we are working on those modeling data today. It looks like December and much of January we'll be working on the 1A group, which are healthcare workers and people in nursing homes. And that will get to the 1B group, which are going to be those over 75 and frontline essential workers in group B sometime in the last half of January or in February.
Now, this next level of essential workers, and I've seen different lists, and I'm not sure that I'm seeing them the same from different places. It seems a bit complex. I mean, I see frontline workers in various areas of society listed, teachers, you mentioned, food service workers on some lists as well. Who, how will it get decided what order these sort of subgroups under 1B will be able to get in line?
So the feds gave very general directions, and then the states are going to give more specific directions. There's a vaccine advisory group that's going to be meeting next week in Oregon to go ahead and figure out some of the subtleties of the 1B group. So you have to sort of judge, do you put sewage workers or teachers or prison guards the top of that group? And I don't know the answer to that. And that's why this group will be working on that in the next few weeks.
And, of course, one of the things as well is just how quickly and how many doses of vaccine become available to each state. In our particular case, I know it sounded like what was going to be available this week was less than what had earlier been thought.
So these are all very moving targets. And because they're moving targets, it's really hard to predict. The other thing that's hard to predict is that the next round of doses is going to need to go to give the second dose to people who got their first dose in December and early January. So it is going to be a bit hard to figure out. I do not think that we'll get to 1B before January 15th. But, you know, if the amount of vaccine we get is anywhere near predicted, we should be able to get to that 1B group either in the last half of January or in February.
How do you respond to the pushback from those who don't want to be vaccinated?
So people who don't want to be vaccinated, it's really very complicated. There are some people who have individual reasons for not wanting to get vaccinated. There's some people who don't want any vaccines. Again, I would work on those people who want the vaccine, show how well it works, show how effective it is, and then maybe those people who are a bit reluctant now will come around. I really don't want to vilify anybody for their vaccine choice, either pro or against. I really just want to get rid of this disease.
And what about comparisons to the 1918 Spanish flu in actions, attitudes, results?
Well, in some ways, they're alike. You know, it came up in the springtime. The 1918 flu came up in the springtime, probably in Kansas, then was sort of quiet in the fall and then really blasted through in October through the rest of the winter of 1918 and 1919. It was different in a couple of ways. That flu was it's a different kind of virus, an influenza virus versus a coronavirus now. That flu actually seemed to be much more serious in young adults. So especially troops and young parents were most affected at the time. Seniors were less affected, presumably because there was another flu back in the 1880s or the 1890s, which was similar and gave older people some protection. This one seems to be much more serious for seniors and much less serious for young, say, 20 and 30-year-olds. But it's dangerous nonetheless.
All right. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer out of time for now. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. We'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.